Welcome to the intersection of technology, cybersecurity, and society. Welcome to ITSP Magazine Podcast Radio. You're about to listen to an episode of Through the Tech Vine. So be quiet, pay attention, and get inspired. There is one truth that is not told enough. Technology is not magic, but it can be magical. Technology is human. It is part of who we are, our evolution, our future. Will it be a dystopian or utopian one? Well, that is up to us and nobody else. Knowledge is power, now more than ever.
Wait, don't do it. Don't do it.
No, I am.
Stop.
We're live. We're live. Nobody freaks right. out. We're in. We're here. We're here. Yeah, everybody Rock chill. Well, good to see you, Diana and Sean. Not that I haven't seen you, Sean, already today, but always
good. We spent a few minutes together today.
Yeah, already. Yeah.
We're just crossing the halfway mark.
That's
right. The half point, the sun middle of the day, anyway.
Do you have any more liquor tastings coming up, though?
No, and like I was telling you, this one was way too early because who wants to drink whiskey at 9 in the morning? Well, actually 8 in the morning. But that didn't work.
Some audience may. You never know, Marco.
Irish coffee, maybe. Yeah.
We did talk about whiskey and the coffee.
We did talk
about it. Irish espresso, maybe. Is that sacrilege?
I don't think so. I know people in north of Italy that they will have a coffee in the morning, espresso, not the big jug. It's an espresso and they put a little bit of grappa in it. And the grappa is, you know, like vodka. It's 40 degrees proof. They say it's, you know, give them a kick for the day. So I trust it.
I think my great grandfather did that, actually.
Yeah.
And then he'd go out and work in the garden.
I have done that when skiing.
Little warmth, yeah.
Yeah, when skiing, I've done that because they kind of warm you up and you just, you know, get rid of it as you go. So
and you're chilled out as you go down the slope.
Yeah, that's right.
Now you're making an affogato version, and I'm there.
A what?
Okay.
Affogato.
Oh, affogato version.
You didn't quite get the drill.
I'm like, what? Ferrari? Spaghetti? What? You know what's scary? I start talking like
gelato
that too.
With the coffee. With
got
the
it. There you go. At 8 in the morning.
And it there probably has its own name. Who knows?
But no, affogato is. It's
it. With the grappa? It's not a special name when you add the grappa?
I don't know. You can, at that point, you can add what you want.
Gato plus.
To everybody's own thing.
Next gen, I forgot it. I'm sure.
Yeah.
There you go. I like it. Yeah, I was talking to somebody once and I kept saying the word burrow. And I don't know what kind of accent I have because I also apparently say the word W-H-I-T-E, but very strangely. People think I'm saying W-A-I-T. And I used to live on White Place in Brookline and it would confuse people. They're like, Wait, Place? But I was trying to say burrow, which I've never had anybody misunderstand before. And I kept saying the word burrow, you know, I was like, it's like a donkey in front. And the person, and I'm going to say it completely wrong, but he finally said, oh, a burrow. And I was like, okay, yeah.
You have to roll the R, is that it?
I guess, which obviously I can't. We all just witnessed.
Yes. Well, there are wild burrows in the neighborhood here. And they love rubbish pickup day. They come and knock over all the trash bins. look for handouts that weren't meant to be handed out. There's always trash all over. Anyway, that's my burro story.
Is the integration of the burro and the affogato and something else?
I wouldn't mix the affogato and the burro.
But if the burro's got fermented fruit, then it could be right. That's happened to horses. Sometimes they eat fermented apples, and then it's like having the grappa and the avocado.
I guess everybody gets
horses.
His own. Yeah, happy horses. It's a funny story that I'm kind of referring my historic technology news a day in in the technology history.
Has burros?
It may have to do with horses a little bit.
Ooh.
So this is my my teaser for what is coming up.
Okay.
And for those that are watching us or listening to us, this is not about Italian food or burros or the way we pronounce things. It's about technology. It's called Through the Tech Vine with myself, Diana, Kelly, and Sean Martin. And this is episode number 8. I'm counting. I am counting.
Are you gonna always count?
Okay.
Yes, I am.
Okay.
All right.
I can't wait to be to like 100, 150, and see where technology brings us by then. But
right.
You know, I gotta be honest. For me, I look forward to this because there is almost zero preparation. I'm gonna be honest. I just like scramble at the last minute to find the news.
It is gonna be obvious.
Wing it.
I'll wing it because I actually have fun. I have fun. I just have fun with you guys and I hope people have fun with us. I mean, we're not here to teach a class. We're not doing tests or anything like that. If you enjoy that,
I have a test today.
You do? Uh-oh.
Pop quiz.
I'm gonna fail miserably because I said I scrambled to get here. I'm not prepared.
Oh, the test is for our guests.
Oh yeah?
Our audience.
Okay.
No, I'm joking.
Do you want to give us some
now that I said I probably have to do it.
I was all excited, but there a prize.
Back myself into a corner there.
Can you not lie to us, please?
Are we grading on a scale? Like what's
So do we want to do a little recap for a change, like about what we talked about last time? Do you even remember what we talked about last time?
Pot smoking birds.
Pot smoking birds. You're mixing listening to music.
Yeah, music enabled snails.
Music.
Oh, that was mine. That's mine. Mine was the smallest computer on the snails. Yeah.
Tiny little computer, which I wasn't really surprised because when I was, putting the podcast up, I kind of re-listened to it a little bit and it wasn't really the news, a tiny computer. It's like, come on, I'm not surprised by that. But the tiny solar panel on the tiny computer that is enough to power it up, I think that was the news. I think that was it.
It sent it over. Yeah, sorry, Mark.
I think it was that the snail ate the tiny computer. Oh, wait, no, that didn't happen.
Maybe I didn't listen well enough to the
conversation. I know.
I think it was the technology to glue the microcomputer to the snail and then successfully get it off without ripping the shell apart.
Which was a whole other facet of the whole thing was just amazing, like bringing all these experts in technology together to solve
and then there's another thing. There was a big divide in the technology. It was only some snails were allowed to have computers while others didn't. So I feel like, how about this democratic computer literacy that we always talk about? What did they do wrong? They're like underrepresented.
It was the great snail divide.
How are they going to succeed in their snail STEM careers if they don't have access to MIDI computers?
Right.
Yeah, it's a good question.
That's a good question. They won't survive. All right. I would say we kick it off.
Yeah. So for those joining us for the first time, this is about finding stories, news, articles, whatever, that get our attention, inspire us, piss us off. Hopefully it's something helping to move society forward in a positive way. Of course, everything has two sides and things done for good could be used for evil, which we touch on sometimes. But this is the three of us bringing something together, rapping about it, getting people to think, and having fun. That's the main thing. It's all about the burros and the affogato today.
And that's the affogato, especially the affogato.
Yeah.
Well, if you think about that, look at the history, and you know, at this point, I'm the historian in technology, whatever.
That's right.
But yeah, look how many things they were invented with a good intention, and then they turn into something bad.
Yeah.
It's one of those famous things when you say, is how you use something that can make the difference between something good and something
or how you can't use something, how you're prevented. I'm kind of foreshadowing my point here.
Okay. Well, let's get it started then. As usual, Diana goes first.
Tradition. We're not going to break. Okay.
So we can mix it up. You can throw it a shot.
No, you can't do that.
And you can't. No, you can't do that.
Okay. So do you guys know who Anthony Bourdain is?
Absolutely.
Yes.
Yes. Okay, so Anthony Bourdain.
I've seen pretty much every episode of his, maybe not every, but many.
He was an incredible
The late force. Anthony Bourdain, yes.
Yes, the late, unfortunately, the late Anthony Bourdain, but he was an incredible force, and he was a chef, and he was working at Les Halles in New York City, and he wrote this book called Kitchen Confidential, which was sort of a behind the scenes of what it was like to work in a restaurant. And it was just so beautifully written, and he would get up early in the morning to write it. You know, just really, it was just such a heavy lift, and it's an amazing book. If you haven't read it, I totally recommend it. It reminds me a little bit of what George Orwell did with Down and Out in Paris and London, when he talked about working in commercial kitchens in Paris. You know, I think it's that level of literature, really. But anyway, so after the success of this book, he had some different career opportunities outside of just the pure chef world. And he took great advantage, for all of our benefit, of these opportunities. And he started food travel shows, and he did a cook's tour and No Reservations. And then the last one he did was Parts Unknown, which is broadcast on CNN from 2013 until 2018, which was when, unfortunately, we lost him. But this year, a filmmaker named Morgan Neville has released a documentary about Anthony Bourdain's incredible life, and it's called Roadrunner. And the documentary has a couple of controversies that are going on around it. One is that the last romantic partner that Bourdain had, that he was with at the time, you know, he wasn't with her physically, but that was the person he was connected to romantically at the time of his death. She wasn't interviewed for this. So there's been some discussion about, was that appropriate or not? But one of the controversies around this documentary is technology related, which is what I wanted to talk about here on the Tech Vine. And it's caused quite a bit of a stir. Is that within the documentary, they'll have an email or a letter, but I think it's emails, that was written by Anthony Bourdain. So it is Anthony Bourdain's words. And the person that he wrote it to, who shared it with the filmmaker, will start reading it. So like one of his close friends, the Ripper, right, Eric Ripper, would like read a line of it, but then it transitions into Anthony Bourdain's voice. And it is truly Anthony Bourdain's voice, but it is not Anthony Bourdain reading this letter. And he actually never read it. What the filmmaker did was worked with an AI company to kind of synthesize, but not like a synthesizer. So you can have like a cat meowing as like, you know, as like the C key or the D key or E sharp. It's Anthony Bourdain, his voice from all these hours and hours of TV that he's broadcast. They created the ability for his voice, in his voice, to read these letters. But the controversy is around two areas. One is, it's not actually in the documentary. Apparently it's not shown in the documentary that this was a reconstruction. So people were concerned that it appears as though Anthony Bourdain actually read it, and they're saying, but he didn't. So we don't know how he would stress. We know, right? You can say the same thing in very different tones or ways and have a different meaning. So the concern is that people don't know it wasn't him actually reading. And is that really a fair thing to do? And I thought it was really interesting also because it's a very different take on, we've been discussing deep fakes so long about, well, you know, you can make it look like, you know, Jordan Peele is saying something as Barack Obama, or, you know, they're morphing Tom Cruise into Arnold Schwarzenegger or something. So these sort of like big, broad deep fakes, but this wasn't a fake in the sense that it is Anthony Bourdain's voice. It is Anthony Bourdain's words, but it is not him reading those words. So I don't have a conclusion. I'm not even sure if this is a problem or not. I just wanted to bring it to you guys and have a discussion about it. What do we think? Is this a problem? Should we be concerned about it? Is it like a mountain out of a molehill? What do you guys think?
Boy. So it's funny because I had a news item or a tech item that I was thinking of bringing to the show. And I don't know. I'm trying to figure out if I want to hold it for that. But it's about false presentations, right?
Yeah.
Or misrepresentation or the lack of transparency. And so I'm going to leave it like that because I actually may want to talk. No, let's screw it. Let's talk about it now. Let's do it. It's about
disclaimer. The person talking right now is not Sean. It's artificial intelligence impersonating
Sean. AI Sean.
At least we're disclosing that here. That it's not me, thankfully, as I fumble through my words. No, so it's around staging homes online for sale.
I have seen that.
And some of them show that it is virtually staged.
Yeah.
Some of them don't. Some show staged and not virtually and untouched. So you can sense, and one is very clear. The other is you might be able at least to know that it's not real. And then others, I think at this point, if you go through many of them, you realize most of them aren't real. So you have that conception. So I guess my point of that is the disclosure and the transparency of what is real versus what is not. And different situations may call for different types of responses, but I think across the board, I would prefer to say transparency, period. Be clear, be upfront with what you're doing, specifically for Anthony's voice. I guess it brings a question. Well, is that letter real? Right. If they're going to manipulate the voice, then I start to question other parts of.
Let's say that that is real.
Yeah.
Okay? Yeah.
One thing, you stage a house, you stage a product. You just say, it's like when you see advertisement and there is this incredible car that takes these incredible turns and it's speeding and it's skidding. And you're like, this is from a professional driver.
That's right.
In a professional course on a course track. Don't go outside and smash your car because you're probably going to do that. And the disclaimer it's key. And we live in virtual reality more and more. As long as you know that he's not real, I think you can go with that. Where I have a problem with Bourdain's story is that if he wanted to say that, he would have said that, right? It's almost like taking a piece of art and say, by the way, this is a Van Gogh, but, I just added another flower there. Well, if Van Gogh wanted another flower, he would have put a flower. And I feel like if Bourdain, don't put words in Bourdain's mouth, because if he was alive, knowing the character, he probably would be like, hell no, right? So I don't know who made that decision, but my vote is nope. I don't agree with that. It's like when you take artists, actors, and you recreate, we bring them in a movie and it's all virtual. I don't agree with that. Make a fake character. I don't have a problem with that, but that's kind of art. I don't know. That's my vision for that.
Yeah, I can see it. And I think you're right. I think this is the kind of thing, because Anthony Bourdain was just so, his personality was so strong and he was very opinionated about a lot of things. And he probably would have had a big tirade about,
right?
He hated vegans for sure. He was always very vocal about that. So I think you're right. I think he would have said some very choice, salty words about how that this isn't what how he would have read it. He could have read his own words, obviously, but then he would have put his own spin on an intonation and emphasis rather than letting AI try and figure that out. So I think you're right. I think if we were guessing at what he would want, he probably would have been pretty offended by it. On the other hand, I can see the argument from the filmmaker side. I agree with Sean that transparency, it really should have said AI recreation.
Oh, that a minimum.
Without a doubt.
That's not even,
You know, having that email read, do you have the person who he sent it to read it? Do you have some wonderful voiceover person read it? You know, here's Anthony Hopkins. Now is Anthony Hopkins reading this? You know, because that happens in documentaries.
Oh, yeah.
Or do you have this weird AI recreation, which is going to draw us in the most? I think, I don't know this filmmaker, but I think that the motivation was trying to bring us closer to Bourdain by having a facsimile of his voice. Well, it was his voice reading it, but in this weird AI way, because they were reconstructing as he read things he had never read out loud before. But so I think it was probably done with positive intent to bring us closer. But yeah, I agree. Absolutely needs a disclaimer. And I'm not sure if I think maybe just in the future, people let a narrator do the speaking, even though, because that person is gone and they can't read that now.
I think there is different angles on this, like for everything. And you already touched on that. On one side, you have an artificial intelligence that just by listening to you, we can go into cybersecurity, social engineering issues here, but you can also go into fake video, fake. I mean, it really now make it sound like someone else. It can be the president of the United States say something, or that Tom Cruise piece that they were showing on YouTube. I don't know if you've seen that. It was like a deep fake, so real that it really looked like it was Tom Cruise.
Yeah.
So there is that fear and how you control that. And there is, again, the respect for someone, I think, in this case. And I really, at the end, don't know if I want to be like you and say, yeah, maybe you did it with a good intention, but I would have maybe had an actor reading it, or because it makes me think, like, is that the novelty that maybe people want to hear that? And so they're going to watch. Is that the catch to watch that documentary?
Oh, that's interesting. I don't think so, because this was one of those things where it sort of came out after, as there were other, you know, people were addressing, and then it, so I don't, he wasn't really advertising it.
Okay. So,
yeah. You know, I think it's just people started saying logically, how could he have, you know, sort of like a lot of people, if you've watched Bo Burnham's Inside, you know, he clearly at sort of late in the stage has shorter hair and is making it appear that that happened earlier. And people who know how to make movies are like, nah, he probably cut his hair and then filmed those and sort of, you know, spliced that in as that was a before. Mm-hmm. So people have been kind of going over this documentary and saying, wait a second, how could Bourdain like record all of his emails? No. So how did this happen? This, what wizardry has occurred? And that's when he started talking about what was AI.
Yeah, well, I think you mentioned something that struck me, Diana, and that you said intonation. And I think, the emphasis on certain words, how you present yourself as you're speaking, even if it's just audio, obviously we missed the visual part of that. But I think the conversion of written to verbal as well, you might lose some context. And I think when you're interacting with somebody, if you want to tell them something, you're also watching as the one speaking to the response that you're getting. Yeah. And you might change the tone. You might stop saying something. You might shift to a different point based on how the other person's reacting. And I think a lot of that is missed just from translating an email or a text into audio, but then also trying to replicate the audio based on other things where, I mean, travel shows, right? He's acting in those situations.
Yes.
And he may be different in non-acting mode. And so that's
maybe presented
something presented personally in acting mode fashion.
I think it's more relevant because it's Bourdain. So if you've seen it, you know it's driven by passion, and I'll be honest, it doesn't give a shit, right? It didn't give a shit. I mean, if taught to politics and cultural things, it wasn't just about food. And that was the beauty of him. He didn't hide his feelings. So again, I think that the conversation is way bigger than that. I mean, what if did happen to you? First of all, who told you can go through my email and then tell it? Maybe it was private. Maybe I didn't want it. for you to read it. So it's an example that would set a precedent on many other things.
Yeah, and who knows? I mean, like you said, Diana, that good intentions perhaps making the audience who loved him closer to him in ways that they wouldn't have otherwise. And perhaps there's a way when some others pass that this becomes technology that helps remember loved ones and friends that in a way that's not possible today. I don't know. Maybe there may be good ways to leverage this.
Like, was there a Black Mirror episode on this where you could create it? Was there,
I don't remember that one.
I don't know.
I thought there was one where you could have a sort of a replication of, because of course in Black Mirror, they can go into technology that doesn't exist yet. And I thought that there was one where you could have essentially the person, your loved one who died, and what they did was they recorded enough of them and you know, knew what they looked like. So they could create something that was almost the person that you lost. And I think if I recall, the episode sort of took a dark turn where at first it was like, oh, thank goodness you're still here. And then after a while, it was like, I got to get rid of you.
Digital taxidermy. That's,
yeah. Well, yeah. That's...
Oh, there is a phrase.
Well, there is a lot of conversation about that and how, you know, can we live forever through recreation of our personality through computer? And in a way, this is very connected to that.
Yes.
I mean, there was movies of, you know, when you, or a friend of ours, Chris, that he wants to retire in New Zealand as a computer, right? I remember Sean always says that.
As a digital sheep now. I want to be
probably
a sheep.
That too. An electric sheep. Do they dream?
The androids dream of that, was the question.
Exactly. All right. Well, I think this is a very relevant topic. I love to hear comment about this from our audience, and I'm sure everybody's gonna have a different opinion on that. As we just did. So
no, I think they're all gonna have mine.
No, everyone.
Wow. They'll share my perspective.
Cause yours is the best, Sean.
Who's Team Sean? Team Sean versus Team Marco versus Team Diana.
That's right.
Are we the voice now?
Or? Let's go.
All right. Well, it's your turn.
It's a virtual version of me today, by the way, full disclosure. So you may not want to side with me today. You never know.
All right. Okay. Well, let's see your fake Sean. What kind of fake news is going to bring on now?
Fake news is, no, it's real news. So this is something I
hope
it is real. It's something I touched on tangentially in one of the previous episodes. I was talking about something else, and it's the concept of the right to repair. Mm. And so I want to spend a little more time, because my understanding is there is an element of this or a component of this in the executive order from the White House and from Biden, and some additional eyes on this concept of things being closed and not being able to be repaired by the consumer. One, because it's just really hard. You can't get the parts, or it's built in a certain way that once you open it, you destroy it, or you, what's the right word? Get rid of the warranty goes away. I'm drawing a blank on the word there. But I guess, and we touched on this last time in the context of what does that do to society and the environment, where we're, and Diana, this goes way back to one of our very first conversations of if we're at a throwaway society, just because mm-hmm. one key on the keyboard of this Mac goes away, do I throw it away? Or my screen has two bars on it that makes it a little difficult to read. Do I throw it away? Now I know some organizations are taking devices in trade for the new ones, and there are programs with carriers that help with that. I have no idea what happens to these machines on the other end. Did they throw away there? I doubt it. If they're paying for them, they're probably refurbishing and reselling, which helps. But I mean, we're so far away from the days of buying a case and buying a hard drive and buying a power supply and buying networking cards and memory sticks and all these things in building a computer. And when one of those parts goes or we want to upgrade it or whatever, it's all modularized where we can do what we want to with those devices and systems. And so there's, and I'm talking about in the context of a computer or an iPhone. The program I heard of a few weeks ago was a program out of the UK, which is focused on appliances primarily. So the right to repair refrigerators and washers and dryers and that type of thing. And I mean, looking back across social media, past years, I've seen comments and stories of the right to repair tractors, right? John Deere, I think, was in the news for if you void your warranty if you upgrade your tractor with software that isn't right. And then cars too, right? Cars, if you change the programming language on the chip to remove some speed limit that's on there or whatever, you void your warranty. That's the word I was looking for, void. So the question is, what's the right thing? Do we allow companies to maintain closed systems? Because there's potentially value in that, right? And I think maybe some of the initial value was protection against reverse engineering. And that may still be true. But the other value is if you have a closed system that you know works really well, then you eliminate a lot of maintenance costs from the manufacturer's perspective, eliminate issues and things like that from their perspective. So they keep costs down because they know that system is going to work as designed. There's no funny parts in there. Even just the plug on an Apple device, right? They want you to use an Apple plug to charge your Apple device. So the question I have is, what's the right thing to do and whose decision is it? So right now it's up to the manufacturers to say, mm-hmm. this is closed, this is open, you can do this, you can't do that. And there are movements to wipe those controls and limits away, driven primarily by nonprofit organizations, but now governments are stepping in. UK and US both have taken this on as something that they want to tackle. The US one, I think the UK one is driven by the environment primarily. And then the US one, I think, is driven by the right to compete or anti-competition stuff. So anyway, that's my story in a nutshell. I'm not allowing you to comment. Do not comment. This is a closed conversation.
We don't have RTC right to comment.
I wasn't going to. Next. Who's next?
No, that's it. It's closed.
Well, I remember, Diana, we have a while back a conversation about recycling and the circular economy and software and hardware. So this is part of that conversation, I think.
Yeah, I when I started out, I was a micro specialist, and one of the things I did was actually fix the physical computers at the company I worked for, and I broke some stuff. I mean, you have to be really careful with these electronics, especially now they're smaller, laptops are more delicate. I mean, when you think back to the late 80s, early 90s, you know, those fully modular ones, basically you got like a case, you know, it's this metal case and you just slotted in the motherboard and the hard drives and stuff. And it was all pretty easy to do. Now you go fiddling around and like a smartphone or a tablet, I get that this is some tricky business. And I understand why manufacturers don't maybe want the whole thing to be open and modular, not just from a financial perspective, right? They want to be able to upsell you, but also because I think that there's a certain amount of damage that the average person could do to these systems. But where I really draw the line is batteries. And I know I've said this before, but the fact that we can't replace batteries, this is absolutely ridiculous. It really is contributing to pollution. It's contributing to, when you talk about them refurbing, a lot of times what they do is they open it up, they put in a fresh battery. Maybe they replace the glass case, you know, on the front, and because so many people crack them. And you've probably got to pretty much, you know, blow it out, make sure it's clean inside, put it all back together. We know how to make battery casing. You know, we know how to make replaceable batteries. Phones used to actually come with battery replacement. That was a big thing. I used to carry extra batteries with me back in the day because I would run out on a charge on my phone and I just, you know, put a fresh battery in and charge them both when I got to the hotel. So this is something we can do without manufacturers having to spend a lot of extra money or putting the more complex or delicate parts of the device at risk. I think also that case, you know, the glass on the front that people are cracking all the time, I feel like that could probably be replaceable. So I think that it's partly right to repair. I get maybe taking it into maybe you could say take it to a certified repair organization or a certified, because if you do let everybody open up their brand new phones or tablets and then potentially break them and go back and say, hey, I'm under warranty, but they broke it. I could see that could actually really throw things off. But the fact that we can't do any repair, and again, I know I've said it many times, but the battery thing is, that's just to me a pure grab at money and obsolescence. And really, for the sake of the planet, we should just allow people to replace the batteries.
Okay, I see that. And I don't know much about these. So what these applies to, Sean? Electronic or everything?
Well, the two examples, one, the UK one is around appliances. The US one opens it up to look at computers and phones and things like that. But I think this applies to anything. And I think we're primarily looking at powered things, to Diana's point, that are computer enabled or computer driven.
So here's my thing. So would you repair it? My iPhone broke. I ain't touching it. I barely add liquid to the windshield wipers in my car. And I used to work on a Vespa, like we talked about this last time. I'm not touching a car that has millions of line of codes and I mean, I can't. So does the right to repair means you bring it to someone else because it says, oh, you have to bring it to the dealer. Yeah. Or you have to bring it back to the company that made the phone or the company that made anything else. And because what I was seeing is barely was the fact that this will force the company to share the blueprint of how you actually repair this stuff instead of keeping it for themselves. So what kind of weird market is going to come after that?
I think the weird market's there, right? I think they know. They've reverse engineered this stuff anyway. And I think part of the problem, I don't know for sure, it's not clear in this, but I think part of the problem is, let me see how much one. There was iFixit, one of the companies.
No, you're right, because one of my tablets, after it was out of warranty, the battery was, again, but the battery was dead, and you weren't supposed to be able to take it apart, and I looked online, and there were YouTube videos that showed me how to take it apart. I used to do this for a living, so I took it apart, I replaced the battery, and I got another year of life out of it. So you're right, Sean, people have already figured out how to take out and do at least some repairs. And I think some companies will replace your glass if it's cracked.
Exactly. Certainly there are companies that replace the glass. So there's a company here that made $21 million in 2016. You can only imagine increased since then. $21 million selling parts and kits to repair things and fixing things. And I would have to venture a guess that not all of those parts, let's pick an Apple system, not all of those parts are Apple parts, right? So who's losing out there? Apple, right?
Yeah. I'm interested about that this is appliances. Like we just noticed when we were cleaning the fridge out that we've got one shelf that's got a little bit of rust on it. So I said, well, how much does a replacement shelf cost? So we're looking into replacing that shelf. But Does that, I mean, is that, are we not supposed to do that? Is Rachel,
I don't think I don't think a shelf is an issue.
Oh, okay.
That's not, yeah.
That's not included in the straight to repair.
I think it's more of the electronic parts.
Okay. Got it. Yeah.
Although if you go to the vendor, he's going to say that the shelf probably going to cost almost as much as a new fridge. So you may as well change the fridge. How many times, you know, like a printer, right? I mean, they give you the printer almost for nothing, and then you pay a lot of money for the ink.
The toner. And,
yeah. And then if something breaks because the alert come up, you're like, yeah, just throw it away, get another one. Given I try not to print anything anymore. But it's a, I don't know. I mean, I think the level of complexity is just making a lot of people shy away from doing their own thing. And I think that is going to create more of another business, as Sean, you said, of, you know, I mean, there are already licensed partner to do certain things, certain repairs. And I don't really understand the volume of, like, do your own repair. It's even...
Well, let's talk about this. Let's talk about this. Let's switch it to the psychological part of it. To your point, Marco, who really cares to repair their stuff? And that this is a problem that I, or a situation that I think we're dealing with. Diana, I know you care because for many reasons, but many do not, right?
Yeah.
Because the upgrade is free. Because it only costs $50 for that printer, who gives a crap? I'll just buy another one. It's too easy. Our mindset has become throwaway. So I don't know. I don't know who are the people fighting for the right to repair.
I think it's to open up the market to other companies.
So the US is competition wise.
That's a competition driven, I believe, because. I prefer to have a value put on what you give back. Like, so I get a new something, a new computer, and you put a value on the fact that I kept this computer in working condition. I can wipe it up, always wipe it up. This is a note. And that you get a value, you get a new one. And at the end of the day, lately, let's face it, we don't own anything. There are articles that are like, you know, even the car, either you lease it or you buy it. Do you ever really own something? Like the John Deere tractor was the thing. Like if I bought this thing, you're not leasing it. What do you mean I can't upgrade something? You know, it's my thing. Like, what do you mean you avoid everything? So in a way, there should be a clear delimitation between do I own this or I don't? Do I, if I own it, then I do whatever I want, and I should be, in that case, able to fix it because it's mine, right? So that I think
I want to tune my oven to go to 980
and explode.
That's right.
But then July. So you own it, and as long as you're not putting your entire neighborhood at risk of fire by blowing up your oven, which is a different right, but. But what about the warranty? What about the manufacturer who, like, you own it, you can do what you want, but you void the warranty. The manufacturer doesn't have to give you a replacement if you decide to open up your two-day-old machine and kind of rule
because
it out.
There's
probably two sides there, too, right?
Well, so they know by experience that there is a lot of people that screw it up, and then they say, oh, it stopped working. No, it stopped working because you messed up with it. And you shouldn't be doing that.
So that's the warranty side of it. So they don't want to have to replace or pay money. Mm-hmm. And then there's also the liability, right? Yeah. You tweaked it.
Oh, like with cars.
You caused a fire with that. We're not responsible.
Yeah.
I think there's
that. Well.
Certainly for vehicles, I can see that. It's a harder sell for a phone or a tablet, but.
But if you think about the amount of personal information that you have in those things and the access that you could give to Joe iPhone repair down the street instead of a company that maybe guarantee the fact that people, and then maybe people are people, so they may get your pictures anyway. I mean, we have seen it in the news, but overall, I think that there is too much at stake. Our digital life. I personally would want to trust someone to do that. And one person for sure I wouldn't trust, it's me.
I thought you were going to say the Hulk. The Hulk.
I was going to say AI Sean.
AI Sean, yes. No, I put a note out to our social media feeds. I say, who has the right to repair and decide? Is it the manufacturers, consumers, government, or the Hulk? So I thought you were going to say the Hulk.
The Hulk.
Yeah, design. But which Hulk? I mean, are we talking the Ed exactly. Norton Hulk or the Mark Ruffalo Hulk?
The one that is...
Before or after or during transition?
Lou Ferrigno?
Before he can, but when he's turned into the Hulk, phone. You know. It's not going to work. He's going to break everything. He's going to, no, this is a car? Yeah, don't Hulk smash it. Exactly. Well, I tell you one thing, as we, you know, this is it. I think maybe we need to start to have one topic and we just talk about that for an hour because we could clearly do that. You know, one thing that is easy to repair, and that's something that I would repair. And
my brain.
I do that. My Burrows. Bicycle. My bicycle.
Okay.
Bicycle is pretty self-explanatory, right? Even if a nice road bike with all the gears and everything, you can see it. You know, the chain goes there. It's still very much analog, right? So on July 20th, 1865, Pierre Lallement, this is my French, sorry, inventor of the bicycle, arrives in the U.S. And he ended up being part of one of the inventors of the bike in France, but then he brought the patent here And then I think kind of like Tesla, he ended up not really making much money out of his invention. But there is an entire story that I'm going to keep it short, but he got inspired. He was a carriage builder, like horse carriage, 1840. And he saw what they call at the time the dandy horse. I don't know if you're familiar with the dandy horse. The dandy horse is the prototype of the bicycle. It's the one that has two wheels, but instead of having the gear, the pedals, it's actually propelled by your feet. So you're kind of, now people that are listening to the podcast, I'm actually doing the feet with my hands like a duck. But so they
push. Like Fred Flintstone?
Yeah, pretty much. Except you're sitting on the bike. Imagine this bike with no springs or anything. So very... very hard to bike, and you're just like pushing, kind of like you know, like you push a kid two wheelers or something. And so he said, well, that's stupid, also, you know, doesn't look good and it's not stylish, of course, being French. And he said, so he started thinking about putting a transmission and propel that. And there's been going on a lot of things. There was the bike, the what they call the penny farthing bike, which is the one with a big wheel in front.
Yeah.
And then it was very dangerous because people will fall and really hurt themselves. Yeah. And it was really hard to balance and all of that. And so the bike, well, the reason why I brought this is because bikes are cool and they're still they're still really much a big part of a city life. Nowadays, I mean, given we exercise, there's still a race, the Giro d'Italia, the Tour de France, and people passionate about it. But it's also the solution for a lot of smart city going green and stopping cars from polluting and all of that, to the point that now the MIT and IUA in China's and other company, Uber itself, they're talking about self-driving bike. That can also balance itself and Ooh. Have electric engine, and it could be used for the last mile. So you put it in the car, you put it out, and then you go in the city with the bike, or, you know, like they do in the Netherlands, they just bike, which is good for you. So
our self-driving.
There's bike, no questions. Bikes are cool.
If the original bike was a dandy horse, are the self-driving ones Cracker Jack Burrows? What are they?
I don't know the name. I have a few. I was interested by the penny farting because I was like, being Italian, I was like, I didn't know what the farting was. So I'm like, why is farting pennies? And then I learned researching that it's the two size of, you know, the, I think it's a 3/4 of a penny was called the farthing in the UK. And so it had like the big wheel in front, the small wheel in the back, and it resembled like a penny and a farthing.
Oh, I like that. That's cool.
Pretty cool.
Okay.
All
right.
So, but so I guess the point is, it doesn't have stuff to fly. It doesn't have to be so out there, technologically advanced. I mean, first of all, I don't think we need the self-propelling bikes or just, I mean, the electric bike, I have one. It's pretty cool. But the, you know, the self-balancing one, I don't know, that seems a little bit of a buzz killer there, right on the bike, right?
I feel like at that point, you just get like a tiny, tiny car that you, only one person.
Right. Or, you know, but I love the fact that you can put a battery. Sorry, Diana, about that. But you can put a battery and make an electric skateboard, an electric scooter, an electric bike. And now we have the power of the battery. But in the end, the bike has been around since the 1860s. And or earlier than that in different version, and it's still pretty much the same thing. Got two wheels, and I love how technology can be so solid and cool that it's still here today. And it's a fundamental solution, maybe for the problem of today's and tomorrow for pollution in the cities and stuff.
That's a really cool like way to look at it, because it's true. Some technology we're always like, make it better, but some technology was just so elegant and so well thought out that it like survives as is for centuries. And you're right, the basic form of the bike, I mean, we've made some advances in the materials that we use and in the tires, but that design is still actually very robust and successful. And that's a really cool thing in tech. Times.
More durable,
keep changing it.
More comfortable, maybe, but you can really fix it yourself.
I was gonna say you can put the baseball cards or the playing cards in the wheel.
Make the noise, the muffler, the Harley Davidson noise. Yeah,
that's streamers on the handlebar.
Yeah. Oh, cool! Look, he's still in all the movies. It's still like I mean, E.T. What does it fly through the moon? Right? It's on a bike. And it's still a very important sport. Then it turned into a BMX. It turned into a thing, but it's still like that two-wheel thing.
So still got the core of the design. Yeah,
it's still that. Still, and I think if you put an engine in a self-balancing one, I think you said the right thing. You might as well drive a car, a tiny little car, because that's in the end what it is. So do you bike around?
So I actually don't, I run, I'm a runner. I like to run. But I actually don't do a whole lot of biking. And I was on this corporate executive retreat thing a couple of years ago. And one of the, and you know how they like send you out to do activities and they're like, well, you could do like wine tasting, or you could do, I don't know, like basket weaving, or you can go bicycle riding. And I'm like, well, I'm a runner. I'm going to go bicycle riding. I want to be out there and see the area that we're in. Boy, he used really different muscles. I was like bringing up the rear. I was very embarrassed. So no, I don't. I can, but apparently, I do not have the right muscles for it at this point in my life.
It's very relaxing, though. I do the stationary bike just to, you know, to keep, because you know you don't necessarily want to go on a big boulevard and. You know, but if you live in the right environment, it's really cool. I mean, it's a stroll in the park on a bike. It's just, you know, not even as an exercise in terms of sport, but it's just like, I think it's a very relaxing thing to do. Sean, and then you put the little basket in front.
The basket in front, the little
kitten.
The baguette.
Kitten in the basket. The bread sticking out.
The baguette,
Actually, extreme mountain biking is a thing here where you ride the gondola up and see how fast you can make it down.
All right. No kits in the baskets.
Not for me, though. I'm not that much of a
guy. No baguette.
No baguette.
No baguette. The baguette would be all over.
But at the top, I'm sure there's an
avocado.
There's an avocado with grappa at the top.
It's an important. See, it's also, again, I'm not paid by any biking bicycle company, but I think it's become a sport, but it's also an everyday life thing. I mean, many people don't even have a car in a city and they ride the bike. I mean, I don't know, in Italy, there are places where you see many bikes around, like maybe where it's flat, maybe not in the mountain. And it's an everyday thing. You go to the market, you got your little basket. I think it's really cool. I love it. I've been very romantic here. That's why I'm thinking the baguette, the flowers, you know, through the Pont Neuf in Paris. And...
Wow. You got a whole thing going on.
I need to travel. I can't take this anymore. I need to travel.
Well, I think none of us, well, Mark, you're the closest to a city, but not really a city that warrants the shared bike system. No. But a lot of cities have shared bikes. Mm-hmm. You pick it up one location, right?
Yeah.
And I think those are pretty cool. Again, to kind of back to the point of helping the environment, right? If it avoids a taxi or...
You know, during the pandemic, many cities took the opportunity to make cyclable side of the road, and it really expanded.
Lanes, oh, nice. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And the cool thing is that they're also allowing the electric bike. I think electric bike in the US goes to like three different levels depending on the speed that they can go. So if you get the one that is up to, I think, 20 miles an hour, you can actually go on a bike line. Because it's not considered a motorcycle as in terms of speed. So, I mean, if the city provide that to you and you're going at 20 miles an hour on an electric bike, or even if you bike fast enough, you can get at that speed without a problem. It's a great solution for what we're moving forward. And it doesn't care if it flies or not. It's kind of cool.
Gonna put a rocket on it.
So that was my historic reference for the day. I was going to go with space, but Sean kind of stopped me. Next time we're going to leave the bike and go back into space again. So stay tuned for that.
Yes. And when you say stay tuned, Marco, same time next week, noon Pacific on Thursday, live Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, and YouTubes.
Yeah, and YouTube is a really new channel. We decided to go there too because, as an announcement, we have a new host joining the ITSP family soon, and she likes making videos. And so stay tuned because she's going to come on really strong because that's how she is. And so if you can follow us on YouTube, that will be kind of cool.
Yeah.
We got... Nothing
go ahead and subscribe.
There,
I think is the proper the term.
It's kind of embarrassing. So please.
The kids use the term subscribe now.
Subscribe.
Hit the bell.
All righty. Well, Diana, always so much fun to. I look forward every week to spend some time with you guys. So thank you so much.
Especially Diana.
All right.
Yeah, not Shaw.
not AI Shaw. Yeah,
certainly not AI.
See him all the time.
I'll try to be back myself next week.
AI Sean is weird. Just weird.
But less than normal.
Peace out. Thank you all.
Bye-bye.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of Through the Tech Vine podcast. If you learned something new and this podcast made you think, then share itspmagazine.com with your friends, family, and colleagues. If you represent a company and wish to associate your brand with our conversations, sponsor one or more of our podcast channels. We hope you will come back for more stories and follow us on our journey. You can always find us at the intersection of technology, cybersecurity, and society.